Okay, quick side note. If you follow me on Instagram, you know that I'm working on my self-discipline with my self-care, and it's a journey, but I am making some progress thanks to this tool. So I've been using my Loombox red light therapy before bed, and I'm honestly loving it. It's one of those things I didn't fully understand at first, but now I'm reaching for it without thinking. So I could be that annoying person that lists out all the thousands of studies about red light therapy, but instead I'm just going to tell you why I'm personally using it. So I'm using it to help with my inflammation because unfortunately I have a lot of it. I'm also using it for cell regeneration for my skin. I'm using it to help regrow my hair. I've even used it on my kids when viruses are going through our house. So as a mom of four and a business owner, the relaxation I'm experiencing before bed is honestly life-changing. And so if you're curious about red light therapy and want to give it a try, you can actually take $260 off with my link in the show notes. So go check it out. Hey there, and welcome to the Caitlin James Podcast. This is an episode that I have been trying to do for over 4 weeks. Normally, this is a place where we like to talk about business and how to build profitable, purposeful businesses. But just like our YouTube channel, every now and then, every so often, I let you in on the behind the scenes of our day-to-day life. This is probably a podcast episode that I am most excited about doing, probably ever. And I'm saying that even though I'm sleep deprived and I've spent 4 weeks with a very gassy newborn, that's a whole other podcast, but I pray we're turning a corner. We've had some false alarms, but he had a tongue tie and a lip tie revised by a specialist yesterday, and our life feels completely different after getting a night's full of sleep. He actually got REM sleep. We have an owlet that we put on his foot, and he had the best night's sleep he's ever had since he's been born. So we are so hopeful, so hopeful. Anyway, I'm diving in to Miles' birth story today. I'm going to try to not rush it, but I'm also at the mercy of how long his nap is going to be. So I have a long list, a long outline of things that I want to share. And the reason I want to share this and the reason I'm so passionate about this is not because I am trying to persuade people to do things my way, or I'm trying to make people feel bad about the way that their birth experience was, or you should feel less than. Our whole culture, anything that triggers a feeling of, oh, I'm less than, results in someone being offended. And I just want to invite you that if you have a natural tendency to listen to other people's perspective on medical things, birth things, and it makes you feel not great about your own experience, and maybe you're not passionate about anything about birth, this is just not the episode for you, because the goal is not any type or form of shame. The goal is to share my experience, because my experience could have looked very, very different if I hadn't experienced some of the hardship I experienced and some of the negative medical doctor experiences that I had. I can look at the last 5-6 years of giving birth to 5 different babies, 5 different ways, for the most part, and share with you how the negative led to the most beautiful end to my part of my life having babies. My birthing years, I fully believe, are done. Now, I have said that on a podcast before. I have said that before on a video. I have proof of me at weddings saying, like, well, thank goodness I'll never be pregnant again. And then I had another baby. I really truly feel like our family is complete. And if the Lord has another baby for us, I fully believe that would be a baby that desperately needs a family to love them. And who knows, don't hold me to that. But I think that my years, my body has done a lot. I've given birth to 5 different humans. My body has grown 5 different humans since 2018, 2017, actually. And so I'm tired. And my experience, let me start at the beginning. My history with my first baby. So I'm super, super like productivity driven, love my business, love success, love, you know, thinking new ideas, implementation. And my story with my first baby, Evie, our girl, our only girl, I've had 1 girl and 4 boys. What are the chances? My story with Evie is that her life and her story, broke me in the most beautiful way. She was a turning point for me. She, broke me down and really helped me enter into a new version of myself that wasn't obsessed with work and wasn't obsessed with succeeding and productivity. Now, I still love those things, but she changed me. And even before she even came, she changed me. And I can see how my story with Evie actually was the foundational piece to ultimately my entire birth experience as a whole. Like, there were things that happened with Evie that if they hadn't have happened, I don't even know if I would have had five children. So let me just start with what happened with her, because it's important that you understand this, especially if you're a first-time mom. If you're a first-time mom and you're listening to this and you're thinking to yourself, I don't know if this applies to me, I most definitely am not going to have a home birth. You still need to listen to this because it's not about a home birth. Yes, I just had one and I truly thought it was magical. But I also was the person that was like, I don't think I'm ever going to have kids. Like, I couldn't even picture myself being a mom ever. And here I am, I've had five babies and I had one at home on purpose. I had a baby at home in my bedroom on purpose. We've had so many different like little appointments for this baby because of his gassiness. And people will always say, oh, was he premature? I'm like, no, he was fine. He was 2 days late. They're like, oh, what hospital? And I'd say, oh, I actually had him at home. And I had him on home on purpose. And they're like, oh, okay. And I'm sure there's a lot of judgment, but I really don't care. And that's a whole nother episode about like following what you know in your gut is what you desire and what is best for you. And you just lay everyone else's opinions and expectations. I mean, think about all the things that were probably, yes, very much said to me when I told people I was thinking about having a home birth. I have great stories about that. Maybe I'll get into it. Okay. So my history with Evie. It was my first baby. I had gestational diabetes with her. I missed the test, the second glucose test, the 3-hour one. I missed it by 1 point on one of the draws, one of the blood draws. So I missed it on one draw by 1 point, and I did the whole thing. I did the nutrition class. I did the pricks, and I was testing my blood sugar constantly. And Evie was measuring huge. But again, you got to remember, I've never had a baby, so I don't know what the normal, like what my babies are going to be. So when she was measuring in like the upper 90th percentile, it makes sense that my OB was like, yeah, because you have diabetes. So come to find out, I actually also had a giant cell tumor slowly exploding in my knuckle from the growth hormones from the baby. This never happened with any other baby. It was rare. It's like 1 in 1,000,000 chance. Like, of course that would happen to me. And I had to have emergency surgery, 9 months pregnant with her still inside. Couldn't be put under general anesthesia. I had to have a nerve block down my arm because you can't do that when you're that pregnant. So, I had a tumor removed from my knuckle to save that part of my hand. It was super successful. It was completely dead. The tumor was dead when they got it out, which is why I was in so much pain. It had busted through my knuckle and the pinching of the knuckle bone on the tumor cut off blood circulation and it died. So we actually don't truly know if it was a giant cell tumor. That's just what the doctor, the oncologist said it looked like. So that was terrifying because he went up to pathology while I was laying on the table and was going to come back down and be like, you have cancer or you don't. I mean, just insane. I was supposed to have my first baby a month later. And just even saying that, I'm like, I can't believe I lived through that. But that was my story with her. Meanwhile, all that's happening, was I really a diabetic? I don't know, because as soon as the tumor came out, I could eat a bowl of Honey Nut Cheerios, which I'm obsessed with cereal. It's literally my favorite thing to eat. If you told me, here's a filet, it's a $60 filet, and here's a bowl of cereal with ice cold whole milk, and it's not even fancy cereal, it's like oat squares. I love oatmeal squares. I would choose the cereal. I'm not lying. That's how much I love it. Anyway, I could eat sugary-ish cereal and my blood sugar wouldn't spike at all after the tumor came out. So my mom, who's an RN, she's a nurse, has a medical background. We think that my stress level and my, cause that can affect your blood sugar, that it was all elevated because my body had this other weird reaction going on I didn't even gain that much weight with Evie, but because she was measuring big, my OB, I kid you not, the end of my pregnancy with Evie was so incredibly stressful and it was so unnecessary. This is what happened. I was still in this thought that if a doctor said something, it is law and it is right and they know more than me. I know nothing. I just have to trust them. But this internal fiery tension started burning within me every time I went to that OB appointment. Every week when I went in, I left feeling more and more frustrated and conflicted and upset. I left weeping every single time. And the reason I left weeping the last few times was because this is what she told me. This OB told me, one, I'm a first-time mom and my pelvis was not made to deliver a baby this big. My pelvis was too small for vaginal deliveries. I don't know if you've ever seen me in real life. I'm not a small person. I'm 5'8". Normally I weigh 160 to 170 pounds. I'm not petite. Like, I'm not. And that is something I've just accepted. I'm just not a small person. And it just baffled me that she would tell me that, like, I couldn't deliver a baby that my body grew. But I believed her. And I was so stressed about it. She told me, the other thing she told me that was crazy was she said, so here's the scenario. We're getting close to 40 weeks and I'm not showing any signs of labor. We get to my due date and she starts saying things like, we need to schedule your C-section. And I'm like, oh no, because I'm reading all these other things online, like all first-time babies, not all, but a lot of them, a whole lot of them come late. That is just normal. Don't look at your due date as like this ride or die date. Like that is, you can't get mad at yourself for that. Come to find out, I never have babies that are early. I went on to never, even my fifth baby did not come early. So I get to my due date and she starts saying things like, I kid you not, she said things like, it's irresponsible as a mother to try to think that you can deliver a baby this big when you're a diabetic. First of all, that's not statistically accurate. So I was, oh my gosh, I was leaving appointments in tears and then researching, but then deciding, like, I'm Googling and I'm researching, I'm looking at studies and I'm looking at, you know, midwife content about like your body can deliver a baby that you grew. I know there are very special circumstances. I have friends that have been in those circumstances. I'm not saying it's always true, but for the majority, it is. And for the vast majority of people who say that they can't, there are a lot of people that never had a chance to try because they had so much intervention on the front end and they were stuck in a bed on their back, not walking and moving their baby all around their pelvis, even though it was super uncomfortable. They didn't have a chance to get their baby and their body to a place to even see if it was possible. I know that's not everyone's story. Do not throw arrows at me if your story was different and that just made you mad. I'm just saying in general, from if you look statistically, most women have so many interventions that you never actually truly get to a point where you think, where you can actually tell, could I get this baby out? Because you're not in super active labor because you're just having to lay there. And I get that. I did that with Evie. So she told me, the OB told me that I couldn't deliver this baby. It was irresponsible as a parent. Then my next appointment, she started saying things about, you're just asking for your baby to have nerve damage from shoulder dystocia. If you actually look at evidence-based birth statistics about shoulder dystocia, you'll realize it actually occurs just as much with big babies as it does with tiny babies, because tiny babies are moving all around. They've got a lot of room in there. Well, my babies are massive and they have never once had a shoulder problem, but I didn't know that. I was a first time mom. And so I didn't know that. So I'm leaving these appointments with her talked down to, feeling like I'm irresponsible, for feeling like in my gut, there's another option for me. And so what happened is that my mom, I came back from one appointment and my mom said, I was in tears. And she was like, KK, I just feel like you don't trust your doctor anymore. And I finally admitted, I'm like, I don't trust her. And that's an awful feeling. Then this was the worst and also best thing that ever happened to me. I got a call from the hospital confirming my surgery time. My OB, because I had passed my due date, decided to schedule, I kid you not, my C-section without my consent. That's not even allowed. but she was just doing it to save it on her calendar because she had an opening, which really speaks to the motivation behind why she was trying to scare me out of just waiting to go into labor. I know there's a lot that goes into this, but when you think about the way an OB is trained, and if you do research about this, birth for an OB is a medical emergency until proven otherwise. Birth for a midwife is not a medical emergency unless proven otherwise. It is a complete opposite shift of the spectrum. And so when you're a surgeon by trade and a surgeon by training, like that's what an OB is trained to do, amazing life-saving procedures like emergency C-sections. But it makes sense that it would be in her best interest and the insurance company's best interest to just go ahead and schedule a $30,000 surgery versus letting this first-time mom think that she can get this baby out on her own. Oh, it was such a mess. And because I had diabetes, I was also sent to maternal fetal medicine, which is high risk. So I was supposedly high risk because I had diabetes and I had to go to fetal monitoring. There was never anything to be concerned about. But all of this, so I had double the appointments. It was so stressful. And I remember thinking, why isn't this easy? And then the tumor popped, all the things. So what happened was that I learned how to be an advocate for myself through all of this. That is the greatest gift. I am using the skills that I learned from this mess with my first baby. I'm using it with helping my current baby figure out what exactly is wrong with it. Why is he so gassy and miserable? And quite honestly, I am hopeful that yesterday we finally found the solution. I learned how to fight for what my gut was telling me and how to fight. It's not that I'm saying distrust doctors. I'm saying have an open mind and talk to a lot of doctors. Talk to doctors, talk to midwives, talk to other people with other experiences. I remember DMing and messaging back and forth with several friends who had massive babies that were, you know, they had diabetes for every pregnancy, had 10, 11 pound babies, and they were fine. And that were encouraging me, like, don't give in to a C-section just because she's putting the fear of God in you, that you're going to be a horrible mother, just asking for your baby to have nerve damage and a broken collarbone. Those are the things she said to me, which is just, I'm just going to say, I really need to forgive her because you can just tell in my voice, I haven't. But I remember when I gave birth in 4 weeks ago to this 10-pound baby in my bedroom, complication-free. It was the most peaceful experience I have ever had in birth. And I so badly wanted to just call up this OB and be like, you were so wrong about me. So I just wonder how many women were told the same thing that I was told, had the same fear and the same, and were just kind of said like, that's just the way it is. It's just your story. There's a lot of people like that. I talked to a first-time mom recently. I saw her and she was like 36 weeks and I'm like, how are you doing? And she's like, great. My OB is like already talking about induction dates. And I'm like, wait, why? What is something wrong? And she said, oh no, you know, just in case like the baby's big. And I thought to myself, wow, that truly is the norm. It's the norm to rush this and to artificially start the labor process, which sets people up for such struggle in so many ways. Some women are fine with it. I was induced with Evie. Let me just say this. I'm not this crunchy person that had a home birth. And I think, you know, that's my only experience. I had two inductions for two of my babies. I delivered one baby stillborn breech. And I had levels of Pitocin that were unheard of to get Evie out. I mean, I had to sign a waiver to up my Pitocin over the most recommended limit in order to try to get my body to go into labor. Because I didn't wait to go into labor with her. Because remember, I have a crazy OB. I decided, okay, let me get back on track. This is what we did with Evie. My OB agreed. I don't know if this is probably TMI. I'm sorry if there are men listening to this, but there are signs that you are close-ish to labor, like a mucus plug, if you like lose that or whatever. So that happened. And I thought, oh, I'm about to go into labor. But after research for multiple babies, I realized you could be 2 weeks away from labor if that happens. But it was enough to make this horrible OB let me go in to be induced. Now, if you're going to use the Foley bulb as a way of like less intervention, it's a less invasive way. You're not going to just get an IV of Pitocin. The Foley bulb, you have to be dilated at least a centimeter-ish, I forget exactly, to be able to get that working and get in there. I barely was able to do that. I mean, I was not ready. I probably would have gone into labor with Evie a week late if I had waited. And it probably would have been a very different scenario. But I didn't wait because I had an OB that made me feel like I was a horrible person. So what happened was I went to the hospital. This is not even the... Oh my gosh. This isn't even the birth story that I'm supposed to be telling, but I'm getting to that. It all leads to that. So we went on a hospital tour right before I had Evie and we met a midwife. God bless midwives. I talked to her, tried to hold back my emotional hormonal tears and said, I'm here to take a tour. I would love to just go into labor, but honestly, my OB is telling me I have to have a C-section. And this sweet woman, her name was Amber Price. She was actually the head of the whole women's hospital, which I didn't know at the time. She held my stomach and said, can I feel it? And I said, sure. And she pushed around and she said, what is your shoe size? And I said, oh, like 10 or 11. And she said, then you can deliver a 12-pound baby. Now, is that fully accurate all the time? I don't know, but she was right. I delivered massive babies easily in like 10, 15 minutes of pushing. I'll never forget leaving there. She told me, she said, you can come into this hospital, which this is a dream. It's a dream hospital situation. You can come in and say, I want to be a midwife patient. And you can walk through your labor with a midwife, and then you can have an OB right at the door, ready to intervene if something happens. And with my first birth, that was ideal. That's what I wanted, right? Because I was scared to death from what my OB had said, but I also knew there were other options for me and I had researched it and I had finally found someone that believed in me and I had a midwife that would work with me even though I ended up getting an epidural. It was not this natural unmedicated situation. Her name was Rhonda and she was just such a gift from God. She literally prayed with me. I remember saying, I can't do this, I can't do this. And she said, that's what Moses said. And then he did. And I'm like, you're right, okay. Oh, she was wonderful. I have this picture of her right after I gave birth. She's holding both sides of my face and she was just telling me like, you did it. You did this. No one else did this for you. You did this. And Evie's like laying on my chest. Oh, it makes me so emotional. It was beautiful. It was so empowering. And that meeting that midwife, meeting the Amber and Rhonda, these two midwives, that changed the trajectory of the rest of my birthing years. I think it changed how many children I have. If I had defaulted to my OB with Evie and just said, okay, I guess I can't even try. I'm just going to have to schedule a C-section. I don't know what would have happened, but I definitely wouldn't have tried to deliver James Breach with his situation. I would have said, fine, I'll just do another C-section. And it's not looked upon highly to have five C-sections and I've given birth five times. I mean, I don't know what our story would have looked like, but all that to say, if that has been your story, I hope you're not shaming yourself because that's not the point of this. The point of this is to give insight into what happened with me. I could look at my own story and say, I didn't have to be induced, but I didn't know that. I didn't know that I had so much freedom. I thought I was kind of a slave to whatever the doctor said, and she made me feel so bad about it that I just felt like I had to go along with it. Now I know better. I could have said, no, I'm waiting. And I know you're going to tell me that I'm a horrible mother, but I'm going to wait to go into labor because statistically and evidence-based birth statistics, why can't I ever say that, lead you, like you can see first-time moms that just waiting to go into labor have better outcomes. And that's what I want. But I didn't know that I could say that. So anyway, let's move on. This, you're like, oh, Caitlin, where is your story about how you gave birth in your bedroom? That's what I'm here for. So I wrote this all out so that I wouldn't get distracted, but I totally have. So I had a forced induction with Evie. Then I was induced with James. James, if you're new here, James was my precious baby boy with Down syndrome. He lived until 31 weeks and died during labor, and we knew he was going to die. He had significant complications from his Down syndrome. He was born breech, which means I pushed out his feet first and then his ankles and then his kneecaps and then his sweet swollen abdomen and then his head. It was a very different experience. Fascinating. Felt nothing like giving birth head first, not breech. So then I swore after that with James. It was like, It wasn't that I needed to prove anything to anybody but myself. I wanted to have a natural, like unmedicated birth, vaginal delivery for my third. And I think it probably had a lot to do with grief and wanting to prove to myself that I wasn't broken. I felt very much like after my tumor, after diabetes, after the trauma with the OB, with Evie, and then having a baby, like losing a child from a genetic situation and complications, and then he was breached. I just felt like, can I just experience something normal? I don't think I can. Like, it just, this is the story I tell myself, that I am always complicated. I'm a complicated person and nothing's going to be easy for me when it comes to having children. So there's a part of me that just desperately wanted normalcy. And like, I can do this. I want to prove myself to myself. I can do this on my own. And I'm not always this complicated case of a pregnant woman. And so with Graham, I waited. And he actually, surprisingly, now, my second that we lost, James, was born in May, and I got pregnant with Graham, my third, in August. So real fast. So my body, I think, was just about done and didn't have hardly any break and had been through a lot. And so Graham actually did come one day early. For most people, I feel like this would have been like a 4 week or early labor, but not for me. My body hung on to him until one day before his due date. And I went into labor with him and I labored at home on the ball. I remember Michael coming in with a milkshake and me not wanting it. And that's when I realized, I think I'm ready to go to the hospital. This is pretty miserable. And I got to the hospital 4 hours later, he was born and I did it on my own. And it was so empowering. And it wasn't just empowering because I didn't have an epidural. It wasn't about that. It was that I fought for what I wanted and I knew what I wanted. And I just felt like before I didn't have options. I didn't have a choice, right? With James, I didn't even really have a choice because of how complicated that scenario was. And my body was starting to show signs of not great things happening. But with Graham, I had a choice. And when he was born and he cried, oh my gosh, I have pictures of Michael and I, we're just sobbing because we had waited for him. We desperately wanted a baby to cry. We'd experienced what it felt like to give birth to a baby that never made a sound. And when you've experienced that, the next baby after that, hearing that baby cry, oh my gosh, it is the most beautiful sound in the world. So then I went on to have Rhett. And Rhett was born in 2020. And I labored with him at home and then went to the hospital. And 2 hours later, he was born. I mean, 5 minutes of pushing. It was very straightforward. And every time I labored and went to the same hospital with midwives, absolutely loved it. I had just a beautiful experience. Just amazing. That's the thing. I loved my hospital births. I had a great support system. I had a nurse, her name's Sarah. She's a dream. And she has literally, I almost didn't do a home birth because I didn't want to not see her. But it just so happens that with every baby, for Evie, James, Graham, and Rhett, she was there and held my left leg. Like, she was always there to help me get these babies out. And I remember one of the births, I don't remember exactly which one, I was in the final push, I think, and she walked in and I remember being like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you're here, like just sobbing. And you know, she's just this highlight of my birth experiences. And so when I would labor at the hospital, working with midwives, but had access to OBs, it was a beautiful situation because I could have a low intervention birth with being able to have, you know, anything I need medically necessary right there. I would labor in the tub. They'd let me get in the tub with hot water, and that acts like a natural epidural during transition. That's when I needed that. And so when my body was going into transition, which if you don't know anything about birth, there's different stages of labor, and transition is the hardest part for a lot of people. And I have learned so much from this last experience, because I worked with a midwife for my prenatal care, not just for birth, which that is something, gosh, I wish I had done for every single baby. It was a game changer, and I'll get into that. But she explained to me what happens during transition is that your body is sending all of its blood to your uterus. And I actually took a course that reiterated all of this that my midwife was telling me. It's the pain-free birth course. My birth was not pain-free, but that's a whole nother story. I do think some people have euphoric, like pretty pain-free, but they just have pressure bursts, but they don't have a lot of pain. Anyway, this course, it walks through the physiological process of birth. That's another thing. If you have never studied the physiological process of birth, it will change everything about the way that you view birth and will completely flip the U.S. model of maternal care upside down. And once you read it and you know it and you have digested all that information, it is so hard to see what happens in the United States versus other countries that just let birth happen naturally. It is fascinating and staggering. I mean, I don't know if you've seen, it's made national news, like the mortality rate, the statistics for maternal care in the U.S. are horrible. There are third world countries with better stats than us. In this developed, amazing, you know, medicalized nation, in some ways, it's not that great. It's not the best place to give birth. It's actually not the safest place to give birth. Now, please don't rip me a new one and say, like, Caitlin, how dare you scare women? I'm not trying to scare anybody. I'm just saying, look at the facts. Like, if you educate yourself, it's not scary because you know and you understand and you don't have to be fearful of anything because you know what you want and you know what's going to be best for you. I didn't know that with Evie, and I didn't really have any understanding of some of the things that I learned for this last birth. So one thing that I learned was that your body sends all of its blood to the uterus during transition, during the part my midwife talks about. It's called the scary place. It's the place where women start to be like, they're moaning and they're groaning and they're saying, I can't do this. And literally that's because, and this happened to me with this last birth, it's actually happened with all three of my unmedicated births. I start saying, I can't do this because I literally fully believe that I can't. And it's because I'm literally lacking blood in my brain. All the blood is going to the uterus. It's getting the energy and the blood where it needs to go to get this baby out. And your brain can't keep up with the surges and the waves of intense hormones and emotions that are happening and the crazy kind of like exodus of blood from the top of your body. So normally she's like, when you tell me I can't do it, I normally always look, this is my midwife talking. She says, I always look at moms and say, you're literally doing it right now. The very thing that you say you can't do, you're doing it right now. And that, I just had a thought, that could be a podcast episode in and of itself. The very thing that you say, there's no way I can do this. I can't do this anymore. Whether it's birth, whether it's relationships, whether it's any type of struggle in life, most of the time when you feel like you're at your breaking point, that is the pressure point where you're birthing something new. And I said that with Miles. I was like, I have own video. I'm like, oh, I can't do this. And she's like, I see. She actually said, you're going to stop that. Stop moving like that. You're going to sit on your baby. Like I was so unaware of what was happening because I was so convinced that I couldn't do it. So loved my hospital births. I loved my nurse, Sarah. I loved my midwife care. I loved laboring in water. But what happens, at least in Virginia, at a hospital, you cannot give birth. You cannot even push. You cannot get close to pushing in water. They immediately make you get out because it's liability. Some people have said it's illegal. You're just not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to do it. So I really wanted, and this leads me into like, why exactly did I want to do a home birth? How did this come about? Well, I knew that I loved laboring in water and I'd done research and I wanted to be able to give birth in water, even though I knew there was a chance I wouldn't get to. I mean, who knows what's going to happen in birth? And my midwife even said, there's a 50-50 chance you'll be in the water. You just won't know. We will have no idea what you'll need and what you'll want. But ultimately, that is one way, that's one reason I started even considering a home birth. I knew this was my last chance. I knew when I found out I was pregnant with this little boy that this was, it fully felt to me that this is the end. I've given birth, will have given birth 5 times and it feels like a finale to me. So if I want to experience anything different, this is my chance. I wanted to have midwife care. Now, I could have had midwife care and delivered at Henrico. Most people do that. There's a midwifery center, which it's different. It's actually wonderful. They're built into the hospital system. Literally, like the office where you would go do your prenatal appointments are right behind labor and delivery unit. But I wanted to have a water birth. I wanted my mom to be able to be there, but also Michael. And because of COVID policies, that's not possible. I just wanted my mom to be able to witness one of her grandbabies being born. And that was something that, I don't know, this baby, I felt like, I know that would mean a lot to her. She has a medical background. I think she'd really appreciate it. And what really was a turning point for me is when I started mentioning, like, this is crazy. I know it sounds crazy. I'm probably not going to do it, but I've thought about a home birth. My mom, because she has started following some of these kind of just physiological birth Instagram accounts and learning more about the whole process, about what your body does to get a baby out, and that you could give birth to a baby even if you're unconscious, because physiologically, I'm going to get into that in a second. I'm going to get into it now. Physiological experiences in the body are like digesting food, blinking, swallowing. Do you think to tell yourself to swallow every single time? And unless you have some type of nerve damage, you don't have to think. That's a physiological process. Giving birth is physiological. That's crazy. But it explains why women used to be knocked out back in the day and their body still delivered a baby. Have you ever thought about that? They used to knock women out way back in the olden days when they were getting all crazy. They would just knock them out and their uterus got their baby out. That's because it's a physiological response. I hate to be gross, but if you think about it, when you go to use the bathroom, if you try to force that process, it's painful and it's miserable. And sometimes that doesn't work. You've got to wait until your body is just ready to release that, you know, whatever. You just got to wait. Birth is so similar to that. And there's all these illustrations and diagrams and things that I learned from my midwife that it just makes so much sense. The way that she explained it to me, the way that I understand it now. In the course that I took, she talked about statistically, paraplegics, they can't move their legs. They have no control over, you know, their bodies, but they have some of the best last stage or late stage birth outcomes. So, you know, there's different phases of birth. The pushing phase, getting the baby out, they have some of the best results. You want to know why? Because they don't get coached to push. They just wait. Kind of like animals. You don't see animals running around screaming their heads off and counting down, pushing, you know, like down from 13. You don't see that happening because it's just not the natural way. But anyway, the other example she gave in the course, which is fascinating. Again, if you don't like this, if you think birth stuff's crazy and I sound crazy, just turn this off. Come back in 2 weeks when it's a business episode. Women with cardiac problems, so heart problems, they're not allowed to push because it would put too much pressure on their heart. They statistically have some of the best late phase of labor. Their outcomes are better because they cannot push. They cannot be forced to push. So that leads me to another reason why I wanted a home birth. Even though I worked with midwives at the hospital, even though I had this setting where I didn't have to have intervention, when I was asked to get out of the tub with my other babies, I was in the worst part of labor, the worst pain imaginable. I was literally right about to hit pushing. I was in transition and I had to get out of the water. The water serves as a natural epidural. It feels like instant pain relief when you're in the water. And your body weight, you're kind of floating in the water. So everything about being in the water alleviates a lot of the pressure and the tension and the pain. But then if you feel like you have to push, if you're in the hospital in Virginia, you have to get out. So I'm getting out of the tub and I recognize, looking back, I'm getting out of the tub and I'm entering panic mode because I'm in so much pain and I just got out of the one thing that gave me relief. And now I got to get this baby out. And my brain is not functioning on all cylinders because all the blood is going to my uterus and I start freaking out. And then they say, okay, well, we're going to coach you. And they pull your legs back, laying on your back on the bed, which is actually the hardest way to get a baby out. Like literally, if you look at the gravity and the way your bone structure is, you block off so much when you, anyway, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a midwife, but these are all the things I've realized. So I realized I don't want to relive that. It wasn't horrible. I'd loved my births at the hospital. They were beautiful. But getting out of the tub, feeling panicked, and then pushing a baby out in the next 20 minutes and having someone coach me into pushing, I want to experience the physiological experience of the fetal ejection reflex. So the fetal ejection reflex is literally when your body, it's called a bearing down. Like maybe you've heard that term. When a woman's body bears down, it's like it is an involuntary action that your body does when you're in labor. And I fully experienced that. And it was bizarre. So there was no pushing to get this baby out. There was just waiting until my body got the baby out. Does that make, it sounds crazy, but I didn't push. My body did, but there was never an experience of like, all right, and push 1, 2, 3. There was never that. There was, oh my gosh, a contraction's coming. And me letting my body do it. It is wild to experience your body do something that you can't control. And now I realize so much. I've watched other births. I've watched people give birth. And there's so much that happens when you force, like, have you ever heard of the term purple pushing? It's where women break blood vessels in their eyes and on their face and their chest. And some of them hemorrhage afterwards. You think about all the pressure of pushing and what that does to little capillaries and little veins in the uterus. And then all of a sudden the placenta detaches and then you've got this flood of blood. And it makes sense why hemorrhages happen. For a lot of women, purple pushing works fine, but it's pretty miserable in the process. And I never had purple pushing. It was never that intense. But I just watching all these videos and learning, I know sometimes pushing is necessary. Sometimes it is. You got to help the baby get engaged a little bit, right? So my midwife was quick to tell me, like, don't get sucked into everything you see on the internet, because the pretty, beautiful, pain-free, relaxing births in water that like basically have no blood and no complications, like that's what hits the internet. You don't see the stuff that's more normal, right? Not all of that is normal, but it can be. So she really managed my expectations well, but she did tell me, you don't have to push unless there's some type of, you know, oh, the shoulders are a little stuck, or that you might have to do some, but you don't have to do purple level pushing. And so that's another reason why I wanted to be at home. I wanted to experience that. I wanted to just wait for my body to do its thing and not be coached into pushing. The last thought makes sense. I did kind of like the thought of being at home. I thought, you know, can't say that I love having people wake me up every 2 hours at the hospital right after a baby's been born. And I don't love the beds and I hate the food and I got to stay away from my other kids for 2.5 days and 2 nights and it's expensive. And I'm really just staying there because of insurance reasons. Like when I delivered Evie and I had high levels of Pitocin, crazy high, and then I had an epidural, for a while. Her labor was 29 hours. The boys' labors were like 4 or 5 hours, like active labor. It was night and day difference. But I could have walked with the boys. I got up, walked to the bathroom. Like I'm fine. I can immediately just be myself. And I felt great. There was no shaking. There was no, I didn't feel freezing and then hot. And cause I wasn't, and my body wasn't having to get rid of all this stuff. I didn't have a catheter in because, you know, if you have an epidural, you can't control if you pee. So you have to have a catheter, which then normally leads to somewhat of a UTI. And so it was so simple. Like I just gave birth and then I was not hooked up to anything and I could walk around. Now I know that's not for everybody. I'm not saying that's for everybody. I'm explaining my experience, so that other people can decide what's best for them. And for a lot of people, I don't feel like they hear kind of a raw, uncut story of the differences. There's a big difference for me, maybe not for everybody, but there was a big difference for me between drugs and no drugs. It was painful. It was awful, but it was only for it was an hour or so of unbearable pain. And I know some people have 13 hours of that. And it's like, I cannot do this. If I had had that experience, I probably would have said, sign me up for an epidural and get this baby out. And that's what happened with Evie. I got to 8 centimeters with her and I'm like, I can't do this. My Pitocin, which people say Pitocin doesn't affect the intensity of contractions. It has to, because when you're naturally going into labor, your natural hormones meet and peak at certain levels to help you combat the natural pain of these surges. And when you false start it, like you kind of fake your body into labor with Pitocin, your natural hormones don't hit at that same height of a level. Anyway, there's studies that prove that too, but I didn't really read in depth about those. So let's talk about my influence. How did I come to terms with even thinking this could happen, like having a baby at home? Amy Demos, good friend of mine, had two home births, one birth center birth. Talked to her a lot. I probably talked to her the most. Jen Olmsted, my designer for my website, who's also good friends with Amy. And I love her. I talked with her at a marriage retreat. And fascinating, she was like, oh yeah, it was beautiful. You totally should do it. The person that convinced me the most was her husband. And she's like, yeah, you know, Aaron is like the most unlikely advocate for a home birth, but he is like full blown in support of it. And he truly like gave me a lot of good insight. So Nancy Ray, dear friend of mine, she has had, what did she have? A birth center birth and two home births. She was super encouraging. I talked to all these people about all my fears. And let me tell you, I had a lot of fear. So if you're considering this a home birth, I'll address that because there was definitely a lot of that. So then last but not least, my college roommate worked with a midwife that I knew was popular in Richmond. I knew she was also older and had done this for literally decades. And I photographed like right after one of her babies was born at her parents' house. And I remember driving up to her parents' house and being like, Emily is insane. Why would you give birth in the living room? And here I am asking her 10, 12 years later, asking her for her midwife's information because I'm thinking about doing the same thing. Just goes to show, if you're listening to this and you're judging me, this just goes to show, don't judge anybody because you'll never know the situation you'll be in. And you could say, yeah, Caitlin, I'll never be okay with a home birth. I said the same exact thing. How ironic. I think I even said like people who do home births are irresponsible. How irresponsible of them. What if something happens to them or their baby? That is so irresponsible. And yet I did it. So I'm going to break down how I got to that place. So my college roommate introduced me to my midwife. Now my midwife, if you're in Richmond and you're listening to this, you're anywhere, have any connection to the birth world, you probably know who Nancy is. Nancy is talked about by her first name. People don't even say her last name because she's just kind of this magical birth unicorn. She is, I don't know how old she is. No one does. It's like this unknown thing. She doesn't seem to age, but she is old. She's amazing. She's literally done this for longer than I've been alive. And I have friends who have said, yeah, she delivered my husband. He's almost 40. And then she delivered all four of his kids, like our kids. So she's delivering babies for babies she delivered a couple decades ago. I mean, just unbelievable. Some people call her the mother of birth. She downplays anytime I say stuff like this, she would downplay it. But she truly is. Someone said to me, there's a chiropractor she recommended. And he said, after I had gone through the birth, I said, Nancy was just amazing. And he said, you know how you know she's the best? Because I take care of all the midwives in Richmond, not all of them, but a large majority of them. And you got to look at who delivers the midwives' babies, right? All these young midwives that are like, you know, in their birthing years, who's delivering their babies at home? That's what you got to find out. Nancy does all of them. And I mean, I don't know if every single one, but she's the majority. She is the go-to person. Then I started talking to all these other people and I started mentioning like, yeah, I'm kind of thinking about doing this. But I'm working with a midwife. Her name's Nancy. And they're like, oh, Nancy delivered one of my friend's babies at home. She's amazing. And I heard probably 20 to 30 stories of how amazing she was and how she handled, you know, complications. Like, oh, my friend actually had a little bit of a hemorrhage situation and Nancy was so calm. The more I heard, the more encouraging it got. My experience with Nancy with prenatal care, that was another huge shift for me. You can ask my family, this was by far my most peaceful pregnancy. Like no tears, no fear, no you know, shaming at appointments, nothing but care, interest. I spent over an hour with her every single time, talking about my fears, my questions, monitoring the baby, talking about the baby and what's normal for him. When does he move the most? He loved being on his right side. So every time we would check on him, you know, she'd say, is this boy still living the right side? She just knew, like, and because of that, she knew his tendencies. She knew his normal heart rate. She knew all these things because she spent so much time and care and attention talking through and getting to know me and him that when it came time and I was in labor, she knew exactly how I had to use like a waist binder, like to hold him straight because my uterus is so stretched out from so many babies. He was still kind of flopping around, but because she knew what his tendency was, she knew exactly up until literally a minute before he was born, I had this thing on holding him in place to make sure he engaged properly, to help me dilate. So, the care that I received from her and the attention during my appointments, I've never experienced medical care like that ever in my life. And it was beautiful. And it made the most impressive impact on my birth experience because it built so much trust and so much understanding. She knew what my preferences were. She knew what my fears were. She knew like when I normally unravel in birth, because we had conversations about that. It was awesome. And I would even go so far as to say my prenatal care, I didn't look forward to it before this birth. It was like, oh, I've got another OB appointment. So I'm going to go in there. They're going to find his heart rate. They're going to weigh me, tell me how much weight I should or shouldn't be gaining. And then the doctor's going to come in and say, you look great. And I'll go home and I'll be like, that was a complete waste of my time. The doctor normally would spend like 8 minutes with me. I spent over an hour with the midwife and I actually looked forward to my appointments. I actually miss them now. It was so peaceful and so life-giving. And I am sad that I never knew that that's what a midwife experience could be until my very last baby. But I'm also thankful that I got to experience it. That this is another huge difference between my OB experience and my midwife experience. I had a horrible first OB. My second OB was a literal angel. She delivered James. She walked through that. She cried with us. She was a literal angel. Then she went on to do teaching and left. And then we got her, one of her good friends, is my current OB when I'm not pregnant. It's complicated, but love her as well. And I know that she loves birth and she cares about her patients, but she has so many patients. She cannot spend an hour with me. And I just experienced my midwife experience. It's like, Nancy loves this stuff. She loves teaching about it. She loves showing me diagrams about how your uterus works and how it's just this fascinating process. And even though she's done this for decades, you can tell she loves empowering women to understand the whole birth process. And I never experienced that with an OB. I never experienced someone to feel like, gosh, they're in love with birth. It was a level of passion that I appreciated from her. And I was fascinated by Nancy. I had to watch myself because I just wanted to ask so many questions. Like, what's the craziest thing you've ever heard? Like, Nancy, how long have you actually been doing this? And I did ask her that several times and she would not answer me because I think it's a crazy number. Loved my midwife. It was such a gift. I mean, I never, ever, ever felt like I left her house. That's the thing. I went to her house in her little birth room, which was fascinating. There's other words I could use to describe that, but I'll just leave it at fascinating. If you work with Nancy, you know what I'm talking about. If you're going to work with Nancy, just know it's going to be interesting when you sit in that little room. But that little room, it's now one of my favorite places. Well, first time I walked into her little room, I thought to myself, what the heck have I got myself into? Like, this is a world I know nothing about. And now I miss it. So at long appointments, I'm going through my list. One crazy thing she asked me, which this was one of my first experiences with her. And I'm like, wow. She said, what is your, the origin of like your family and your ethnicity? I'm like, oh, I'm white. It's pretty obvious. Look, I mean, I'm very white, redhead, pale skin. And she's like, no. Like, where is your family from? Are they Scottish? Are they English? And I'm like, oh, I'm not really sure. I think we're kind of Irish Scottish. I don't know. I can ask. And she mentioned some interesting things like pairings of, she's like, there are certain people that are their body frames, like Asian body frame. They're so they're smaller. And if they are paired with someone that is more like Scottish or Irish descent, or even Native American descent, the skull size, just, you know, the origins of the way that these types of bodies form, it does, it can be complicated. And so it's not a great fit sometimes for a home birth, not all the time, but she used that example and it blew my mind. Like, never has anyone asked me questions like that. I'm like, well, Michael's mom, we kind of think there's Native American there. Maybe that's why our baby's heads are so big. She asked about my history. She asked details about every single birth. She asked things that I didn't even know. Normally, what week do we feel the baby kick? I'm like, I don't even know when I felt this current baby kick. Such detail. I mean, it was amazing. So she asked me that, and I, from the beginning, taking all these detailed notes and never trying to scare me. Also never making me feel irresponsible or like, oh, you haven't started your prenatal, these special prenatal vitamins yet. Like, you really need to. Like, she would always say things like, you're a busy mom. You're just doing the best you can. Let's try to start them next week. Just so wonderful. Another thing that I loved about her was she also wasn't so crunchy and so natural that it's to the extreme. Like, we made a decision together that as soon as the baby was out, she was going to give me a shot of Pitocin in my arm to automatically help the uterus start to contract and release the placenta, because I've never had a problem with hemorrhaging and I've never had a problem delivering the placenta. But I've always had Pitocin, even for my unmedicated births, I've always had a shot of Pitocin to help jumpstart that that process after the baby's out. Because there's really very low risk to that. You don't have to do that. But for me, I was worried about complications. And she's like, why don't we just go ahead and plan for that? She's like, it's great prevention and it's great peace of mind for you. And so we did. And so as soon as the baby was out and I was getting ready to birth the placenta, sorry, it's such a weird thing to talk about, she gave me a shot of Pitocin in my arm. I didn't even feel it because literally I'm just holding my brand new baby in my bedroom. And I appreciated that she's not anti-medical things. She's not anti-medicine. She's not anti-Pitocin. She's just anti-intervention, which that's what I wanted. That's what I loved. So let's talk about what did I have that was normal? I still had ultrasounds. I still worked with the hospital. That's what's crazy. Nancy is partnered with the hospital. So it was amazing to be able to be like, you know, everyone at Henrico Doctors, all the nurses in labor and delivery, everyone knows who Nancy is, because if she has someone that needs to come in or someone that gets nervous, or she will deliver babies at the hospital all the time. It's so everyone knows her and loves her. It wasn't like I was in this weird disconnected world where like I'm anti-hospital, I'm anti-doctors. It's like, no, Nancy is completely connected and in good favor with the hospital staff. So let me talk about fears, because oh my gosh, it's been an hour. My fears, I had fears until January and I delivered him February 18th. I was honest about the fears with Nancy and she constantly told me, you don't have to do this at home. I could show up to your house when you're in labor and you could decide, Nancy, let's just get in the car. I want to do this at the hospital with you. I want to be with you, but I want to be at the hospital. That gave me so much peace. Now, things could happen fast and I could have lost that opportunity, but we talked about this. I had gotten great advice from other women who had done home births that if my peace level increased as I got closer to giving birth, it was a sign that I'm going to be more peaceful at home. And that peace level didn't shift until probably mid-January, so 4 weeks before actually like having the baby. But that I really experienced that to be true. I started praying that God would start to shift my heart one way or the other. Like, if this is not for me, like, just help me to discover that now and not when I'm 7 centimeters and freaking out. I prayed that God would take control over just my fears and help remind me what is actually true. So what was actually true, when I would think about, like, if I wasn't careful, I'd lay in bed and I would visualize what I thought hemorrhaging would look like at home and how traumatic that looked in my mind, or how traumatic it would be if he was born and didn't breathe. And then my mind went to how much shame I would have if that happened to me. And I'd be like, he could have been saved if he had a NICU. Like he could, I would just go down that path. And I had to catch myself because you can do that for anything. And if you really want to freak yourself out, you can start visualizing what it would look like to have your minivan sideswiped by a car and crush your 2-year-old in the back seat. Like that is terrifying. And the anxiety that I experienced after losing a child, I've really had to learn how to control and monitor what I let my brain think about. Because I do have control over that. And I can remind myself, what is actually true? Well, what's actually true is that it's a very rare situation to lose a child in a car accident. Can it happen? Well, sure. But I could also die of a heart attack 5 minutes from now. That's rare, but it happens to people. You cannot live in fear. And if you want to live in fear, then that's a whole nother story. That's, you're choosing that because you like what you get out of it. So what fears did I actually have? I had fear about all the different types of complications that I could think of. And I took every complication to Nancy. Almost every appointment, I had a new fear that I wanted to talk through. Like, what about hemorrhaging? Well, she has everything besides an operating room, she's got a lot of tools in her tool belt that would be used for me in a situation of hemorrhaging at the hospital, like 3 different options. And I've never needed one of them. And I think what I realize now that I've lived through a home birth is that my version of the emergency situation I played out in my mind was like, it's an emergency and it's happening at home and I'm not going to make it to the hospital because it's that fast and it's that horrific. And I just realized, literally got him in the bed after he was born and she was, you know, pushing on your stomach like normal. Placenta was out. And every time she'd push on my like abdomen to check bleeding, I'd say, is that normal? Is it a normal amount? And she'd say, yes, you're fine. You're good. And she reassured me constantly. She's like, I am constantly looking for red flags. Constantly. And I'm constantly evaluating what needs to be done one step ahead before it needs to be done so that it's not a panic situation. So it's not crazy, stressful, life or death. Like she's never lost a baby, never lost a mom. It's not a hemorrhage situation. I feel like she has said before, this was fascinating. She said, I can tell by vital signs of a mom. I can tell by the behavior of the baby if we should not be at home. And I will transfer people at the slightest notion that something is a little off. And so I don't let people continue at home if I see any signs of that. And that was such a reassuring thing to me. And I really saw that in action when I experienced my own birth. Things like prolapse, things like what if the baby's not breathing and all the resuscitation things that she has. And but the main thing was if she sees any type of sign of any abnormality from what she has come to know of me and my baby through these long appointments, she's like, we're not going to even risk it. We're just going to go. I had someone say to me once, they're like, oh my gosh, you're having a baby at home. And Nancy told me later, she said, you don't say that. You don't tell people you're having a home birth. You say, I'm going to labor at home and I have a provider, a medical provider that's going to allow me to do that. And then they're going to come to me. And then together, based on how it's going, we're going to decide, do we finish this process at home or do we just go to the hospital and have a baby? She's like, it doesn't need to be that complicated. We just build up this crazy level of fear. And a lot of that, if you really think about it, stems from culture. And it stems from the way birth is depicted in movies and in conversations. Like, I mean, I was petrified of giving birth. And now I realize it's not really, it is crazy. I mean, it's insane. But it doesn't need to be so fear-ridden. And that was another great module in the Pain-Free Birth course that talks about understanding where your picture of birth came from and deconstructing that so that you can have a more accurate depiction of birth. Because anything in our culture, and especially in the U.S., birth is not depicted in the way that it actually physiologically is. It's depicted as just horrific and just insane. And just out of control. And sure, I definitely felt out of control, at least for 15 minutes. But that can't be our full depiction of birth because then we go into fight or flight mode. And if you only listen to the medicalized approach to birth, then you're never fully going to get to experience what your body was naturally created to do. So what was actually true? When I would start to have these crazy freakouts about, I can't do this at home, I would start to remind myself what is actually true. What is actually true is that I was more educated for this birth than I ever have been for any other birth. I've had more attention and care during this pregnancy than any other pregnancy before. I've been monitored and spoken to and walked through scenarios and looked at my baby more than I ever have before. I have zero complications. And I said the whole time, if I have any complications, I am nixing the home birth thing. Any slight complication. But I also have friends that have had complications and you just have to use your own judgment. And then I've asked all my questions. I have answers and I know what will happen if all of these different fears I have actually come true. So eventually I had to decide if I was willing to never know and live with the what ifs of like, I wanted a home birth, but it's just too risky. Or if I was willing to take the risk, and then I look at the risk and I realize statistically my risk of having something horrendous happen is very, very low. And if I do have a complication, the chance that I could get to the hospital and be fine is very, very high. It would be a very unique situation that I know people, I talk to women who have had horrible, traumatic, tragic birth outcomes. I mean, that is a new part of my life. Ever since James, I get emails and calls and DMs and from women all over the country, sometimes other parts of the world, that just want to talk to someone who's given birth to a baby that didn't survive, because that's a unique club. So if you're saying like, Caitlin, like this is so irresponsible, please know I understand complicated scenarios and I've lived through them and I still chose this because ultimately it's what I wanted. And ultimately the risk level, because of how healthy the pregnancy was, how healthy I was, the risk level was relatively low. So what actually happened in this birth story? Well, I wasn't even in labor when my midwife showed up. This is the complicated part. This fourth baby has thrown me for a loop so many times, not just his first 4 weeks of life, but he's the hardest newborn that we've ever had. He's actually crying. I need to go upstairs. He's settling down. Okay. I had prodromal labor. I had contractions that were like 3 minutes apart the night before he was actually born. Like a full 24 hours before. And they were so intense and so regular that I told Michael, I'm calling Nancy. I called her, she packed her bag, and literally I stood up at 4 a.m. to go get something to drink, and the contractions completely stopped. Like they had been going strong all night, and later I found out they got me to like 5 centimeters. They were real, but it just stopped. Completely stopped. I was so frustrated because I barely got any sleep and yet I wasn't even in labor. And then I also kept my sweet midwife up all night and I wasn't even in labor. That really got to me. And I realized later how much it got to me. So that whole day I'd have like a strong one here or there, but Nancy was at a conference and she texted me when she was done and she was like, why don't I come to your house and check you? And you know, if you need some help, I think we can get labor started back up again. I'm like, okay. So she checks me and in her words, my body's ready to have a baby. You know, I was 5 centimeters, fully effaced, you know, without going into detail, she was like, your body's ready. So we just need to get you into gear. And sometimes she had warned me 4th, 5th, 6th babies can be very complicated with their labors. And sometimes you have to jumpstart the body, not jumpstart, like inject Pitocin, but just do some things like let's align the baby, make sure he's fully straight, put this binder, like this wrap on you, hold him tight in that position, walk around for 2 hours up and down the stairs. And let me, you know, do this all after I've checked you and let's see what would happen. So I did that. And, I had contractions where I had to like stop and like hold onto, you know, the post of our railing or the couch or, but they were not consistent unless I kept walking. And so I had the option of, okay, she goes home and I'll just wait for this to come when it comes. Cause I knew I would go into labor. I would. Her thought was, your body knows how to do this. You've done this many times. She has seen this happen so many times where you've had a 4th or 5th baby and the body just needs a little jump start to get into a rhythm of labor. And because I had prodromal labor for so long, she didn't want me to have like uterine fatigue where like my uterus kind of tires out. I don't think this would have been a concern if I had had like one baby prior. So she said, I can go home and you can call me when it starts up again, or we can mix castor oil with vanilla ice cream and peanut butter and you'll have a baby by midnight. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. I did take castor oil with Rhett. Castor oil, I didn't realize this, but most people think that it makes you have diarrhea, and the diarrhea, experience in your body is what starts labor. But really what starts labor is that it does move through your intestines. If you mix it with a binder, like a protein, you don't have to have diarrhea, which I had literally nothing. I had no complications from castor oil. Anyway, I took it, and what happens is it releases prolactin, which jumpstarts labor, and it was not instant, maybe within 30 minutes. Contractions, they were close. It was picking up. 2 hours go by. We're like at 10:50, transitions hitting, and I start thinking, oh my gosh, it's almost Evie's birthday. I'm going to have a baby on Evie's birthday. What are the chances? I really wanted him to be born like right before midnight, but that didn't happen. So I get in the tub. It's midnight. It's Evie's birthday. Oh my gosh. We have our first and last baby, our birthday twins. What are the chances? I get in the water. I've never been checked, you know, during all that. There's not really a reason to check me. Well, I think I was checked once and I was at 7. And that's how we knew, like, well, this is working. We're going to keep going. But you don't have to be checked. A lot of people in the more natural world are like, don't ever get checked. You'll just know. Your body will just know. But I did get checked that one other time. And I don't mind being checked. It doesn't hurt me. But got in the tub and the contractions were, thank goodness I got in the tub because they got crazy. And that's when I started crying. That's when I started, when they would hit, being like, oh gosh, I can't do this. I can't. I was trying to relax and not tense up my body, because if you tense up your body, you're really working against what your body's trying to do. Then after 20, maybe I think on the paperwork it says like 19 minutes, then my body started to push, like we started to bear down. That was bizarre. It was bizarre because you can feel your baby moving down through the birth canal. You can feel that. And I remember when I got to the place, this is hilarious. If you know anything about me, you know that I'm pretty like straight lit. Like I'm not a heavy drinker. I've never been a partier. You know, pretty boring person to some people, I guess. But I'll drink like cocktails, but I don't love the taste of alcohol. I definitely don't love whiskey. But sweet Nancy was like, Michael, go get her a shot of whiskey. And she's like, it's a great resource, because when you get to the scary place, when you get to the place where you start feeling like, I can't do this, if you have just a little sip, and that, I didn't even have a full shot. I could barely do this. It burned so bad. But Michael thought it was hilarious. We have it on video. I took just literally like a fourth of a shot of whiskey, and I do feel like it helped me calm down. I felt like I wasn't that crazy. I was able to kind of regain some composure. Another contraction came and I started kind of floundering in the water. The midwife, Nancy, was like, maybe do you want to get out? You're floundering. And I'm like, I can't get out. I can't. And two contractions later, his head was out, and then his shoulders were out. And then I'm so grateful that she was there and she helped me not freak out. Because this is what I wanted. I wanted the peaceful, like, babies are living in water. And when they're born into water, you don't have to immediately pull them up, because they're still getting oxygen from the cord. Until their face hits air, they're not going to be signaled to take their first breath. So we held him underwater. So peaceful, just for a second. I mean, maybe 10 seconds. It wasn't long. Let him get kind of acclimated to not being in a tight space. So like the umbilical cord's kind of floating, his arms are kind of opening up, and he's getting used to like, oh my gosh, it's not tight. I'm like, where am I? But it was so peaceful. And then I lifted him out of the water and held him in my chest and pulled him back, and he cried, and I lost it. I was sobbing. And I just had this moment of thinking, I did it. I did this. I had a home birth, and he's healthy and he's happy and I'm happy, and there's not blood everywhere, and my carpet didn't get messed up. Can I tell you, that is the number one concern of everyone, is you're going to ruin your house. I talked to someone recently that was like, wow, what a mess. I'm like, you guys, it's not that messy. Like, I don't know what your experience of birth has been, but like, it's not blood everywhere, all over the walls. Like, that's not the reality. And if you have a great midwife that knows what she's doing, we didn't clean up a thing. She did everything. It was fascinating to watch Nancy do her thing. Her work really begins once the baby is out. She's taking care of me. She's taking care of him. She's taking care of the tub. She's draining it. She's making sure everything is cleaned up while also checking me every few minutes and making sure that he's latching okay and getting an herb bath ready for me because it's good for helping you heal down there. Like, just amazing care. And then she gets ready to leave and she says, don't worry about waking him up. He was just born. He is good. Let him sleep and you guys sleep. And I'm like, wait, I don't need to nurse him every 2 hours. That's what you have to do in the hospital. And she's like, right, that's a hospital thing. You don't need to do that. And she was right. I got like 4 or 5 hours of sleep, literally 6 hours after giving birth. Unheard of. In my own bed. Amazing. I used my own bathroom. I showered and took a bath in my own shower and bathtub. I didn't even have to look through a bag of what to wear. I just went to my closet and decided which sweatpants seemed the comfiest. Like, it was such, oh, it was so peaceful. If someone was to ask me, one, would you do it again? In a heartbeat. Now, I don't want to have another baby, but I would do a home birth again. I wish that my last two boys, they were both home births. I do. I don't think I would have felt as comfortable having a home birth if I hadn't had already had two unmedicated labors and births that were pretty straightforward, very straightforward. That was very reassuring to me. And I had experience. I basically lived through that except in the comfort of my own home. What I realized with Evie is that I wasn't broken. Birth is not an emergency. Fear really screws things up. It leads you down paths that are not your best path. And that's a way that doctors can really get you to do what they want you to do. I realized with Evie that I can trust doctors, but I can also be discerning. I can trust doctors, but also it's okay to look at one and be like, I don't think that's for me. I'm going to go talk to somebody else. I learned that midwives at the hospital are not the same as having them as a provider. So having the care of a midwife just for when you're in labor is not the same as having the care of a midwife for all your prenatal care. That is what I mourn the most. That was such a beautiful part of this that I just didn't even expect. What I learned about talking about home birth, this is just another thing I wanted to make sure I shared, is that you don't even need to share it. You know, like, I think sometimes I shared it because I was trying to feel out, like, how crazy am I? And there was no need for that, right? I was looking deep down. I was looking for validation from other people that hadn't done my research, that don't have the experiences that I have, that don't know what I know, that don't have the friends that I have, that have had the experience that they have had. It's just, why did I do that? I think I was trying to figure out, how crazy am I? And that's not where you don't go to random people and say, like, yeah, well, I'm actually thinking about having a home birth, and then look to them for validation. There's not many people that are going to validate a home birth, except the one person that did for me that really made me feel like I could do it was my mom. She's a nurse. She comes from a strict medical background. And I remember telling her, I'm thinking about this. And I remember her saying, without skipping a beat, she said, I think you should. I think you would love that. And I'm like, but what about the complications? Like, what about the risk? She's like, I don't think you'd have any. I think even if there are complications, you would be okay. And, you know, just look into it. And so I did. And I started going down the trail of fighting for what I thought I wanted. And it ended up being a good fit for me. It is not going to be a good fit for everybody. It wouldn't have been a good fit for me with my first. It definitely wouldn't have been a good fit for my second. That was a medical emergency. I don't think I would even feel comfortable with it being my third, but I do think Rhett could have been born at home and it would have been beautiful. And we wouldn't have gotten COVID from the hospital. That would have been something that would be a positive. So who can do this? Who can do a home birth? You have to be low risk. You have to be low risk and you have to be okay with without an epidural. There are so many ways to help manage your pain. The best thing, I think, is to understand the process of birth, because if you understand where your pain's coming from and what it's doing, I think it empowers you to handle it differently than when it's just fear-based, when it's just like, ow, 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 oh my gosh, I can't do this. But if you understand what it's doing, it's more of a like, oh, I gotta make it through this one, just one at a time, knowing that it's opening up what it needs to open up to get your beautiful baby out. But you have to be low risk. And so there were situations like with Evie, with diabetes, with my tumor, I didn't have a chance of doing a home birth. That wouldn't have been wise. The hardest, and Nancy shared this, the people that have the hardest time are people that it's their first birth and they're not used to the pain, and they're the ones that are transferred the most, and there's no shame in that at all. But those are the most common transfers, people that are it's first time moms. So what did he weigh? This was another question. He was exactly 10 pounds, just like Rhett was 10 pounds, 1 ounce. Graham was 9 pounds, 14 ounces. And Evie was 9 pounds, 10 ounces. So thankfully he was an 11 pounder. His full name is Miles Lee Alsup. And if you're looking for like this beautiful, like crazy story of where we found Miles and what its deep meaning is, we just like the way it sounds. Lee is a family name. All of our babies have middle names that are family names. Last but not least, gosh, there's so many other things I could say, but this is way too long. What do I want to remember the most about his birth? I want to remember the kids' reactions. So it was Evie's birthday. We let her see him first, and we put Michael in my closet, and Evie came in and got on the bed, and I'm like, happy birthday, Ev. Like, we have a surprise on your birthday. Baby Miles is here. No, we didn't even say that. We said, do you want to see your surprise? And then Michael came out of the closet holding Miles. And then Evie immediately looks at my belly, which obviously still looks very pregnant, but I'm like, he's not in there. Literally, he was born 12 hours before. The boys then came in and they were so sweet, especially Rhett. We were blown away. Rhett's only 2. We were blown away at how great he was. Just pure joy and excitement. I want to remember, this was the easiest recovery I've ever had. And yes, there was some tearing, but it's the same as the hospital. You just get stitched up, you're fine. Now, again, I'm not trying to be disrespectful. There are some women that like literally that's the most traumatic complication that they had. But when it's not traumatic and it's simple, it can be handled simply at home. It wasn't, a lot of people had questions about that on Instagram. They were like, well, what happens if you need stitches? Well, you just use lidocaine. So I couldn't feel anything. And you get stitched up like normal. You're just at home. And that was not weird. It was fine. It was actually very peaceful instead of being in like this medicalized setting that makes everything seem way more intense than it is. So this was my best recovery by far. The lack of anxiety and lack of interruptions that we felt in the hospital was such a gift. Now, again, loved the people at the hospital. The nurses that cared for us have always been wonderful, but the nurses have to do what protocol is. They can't let you rest and relax. They have to come in and do all the things. It was so nice to just be home. Like, again, there was a level of like, there was no freaking out about anything. There was no anxiety about anything. No one telling me like, oh, you need to make sure he's latching well. The lactation consultant will be here in 30 minutes and she's going to watch you to make sure you're doing it well. And then you got to do it every 2 hours. I didn't love that at the hospital. Now, not everyone has an experience like that, but for us, we've had a few experiences like that, and I really loved not having it this time. Something funny that happened, we blew a fuse right after he was born because we had a space heater plugged in to make sure the room was warm. The whole room went black. Like, literally, I'm laying on the bed, and baby's still connected to the placenta, and then the lights went out. We fixed it fast. So, and last but not least, I want to remember the joy of my mom getting to see me have a baby. That was so cool and so sweet and just something that I just never thought would be possible. And it was. So my home birth experience was literally the perfect bow on the end of my journey of having children. It was just the perfect way to end. And My greatest advice to anybody who is having their first baby, their fourth baby, it's never too late to learn more, to advocate more, and to fight for what you ultimately want, and to look at evidence-based birth statistics. Look at that. Because you have to dig deep to really understand fully what certain experiences are like. Because if you are looking for home birth statistics, you're going to have home birth statistics of births that happen accidentally in garages, when in the driveway, but they didn't make it to the hospital. You got to make sure you're looking at like planned home birth statistics. When you work with a provider and you're prepared for this, it's different than if a baby is accidentally born walking to the bathroom. Like that's not the home birth experience I'm talking about. So you have to be careful that when you look at this type of information, that you're truly looking at a pure form of statistics and not this combination of crazy things all lumped into like, yep, home births are wild. Look at the statistics that come out of our country. Look at what's happening medically with the maternal mortality rate. And it's sad. I don't say it to scare you. I say that to educate yourself, because I have no fear in birth, right? I mean, sure, I have the normal like, oh gosh, like it's going to hurt. But I know I've never been more certain of God's design. Like I was created to be able to do this. And even if something had happened where a whole list of things could have happened, and I could have ended up with Miles with a C-section, and I think I would be at peace with that, because I know that I advocated for what I wanted, and then I just have to release control. So that's like the way to tie a bow on this. Advocate, know what you want, educate yourself, fight for what you want, but ultimately when the rubber hits the road, know what you want, but you've also got to be able to release control. Because when I finally relaxed and was like, you know what, I'm not going to try to force myself into labor. I'm just going to trust that this will happen. It happened, and it was beautiful, and I would not change a thing. So I'm going to go upstairs and feed this 4-week-old baby who is very ready. This took an hour and a half. Oh my gosh. I hope you enjoyed this. Please know, not trying to convince anybody to do a home birth, just sharing my experience. My greatest thing I want people to take away from this is to love your doctors, trust your doctors when things don't feel right, advocate, and find other people, other medical professionals that have different opinions. My entire medical experience with Evie's hips, with James, with my tumor, with everything required me to fight for myself. And I would say, yes, every single version of complication in my life that has happened medically has required a second opinion. So just don't get stuck into thinking that one opinion is everyone's opinion. Be encouraged that birth can be beautiful, that you can do it, that you, if you've had a complicated story before, it doesn't have to be complicated later. And also be encouraged that if you love having a birth that is so far from what I just explained, that's okay too. Reminder, my sister is the queen of C-sections, and it's been a beautiful experience for her. Like, she loves them. She watched me give birth too. She was there. I didn't mention that. That was another beautiful thing for me. My sister was there. I do think she watched me give birth and was like, yep, I'm glad I do C-sections. But she loves them. She has had a beautiful experience, and we joke about it all the time. We are night and day when it comes to our birth preferences. And it's one of, I think, the most beautiful things about our relationship is that we can be best friends and sisters, and there's no shame, right? She supports and loves that I really have a passion for learning about birth and watching it happen naturally and being able to experience it naturally, like without medication. Sorry, some people get mad if I say naturally. A C-section is natural too. Birth is birth. It is. But unmedicated, she supports that I really have a passion for that. And I support that she has no desire to experience that, like at all. And her planned C-sections, the scheduled ones, have literally felt like almost like a spa day for her. She gets her, she'll shower, do her makeup, and she knows exactly when her baby's going to be born. And that has happened multiple times for her, and it's been wonderful. So there's no shame in that. I think the beauty that I've seen and experience in this last birth is that those opinions can coexist. I do think this podcast was aimed and geared towards women who want to learn more and feel like they have a desire to learn more about the birth process. And I just want it to be empowering for people who have never really dug deep. Maybe they didn't even know there was anything to dig deep into. And this is all kind of eye-opening to you. So dig deep into physiological birth. Not trying to sell the home birth thing onto anybody. That's something, if you're supposed to do it, you'll find it on your own. But definitely educate yourself about physiological birth. I gotta go feed a baby. I hope this was enjoyable.